Welcome to Recover Strong, a show that will transform your recovery from an eating disorder by helping you go from theory to practice to mastery. I'm Jessica Flint, founder of Recovery Warriors, and you are listening to our podcast channel created specifically for you in all the stages and phases of recovery. I want to celebrate you for carving out this special time to learn new skills, tools, and get the inspiration you need to recover strong. Let's get started.
I'm your host, Andrea Wells. And just like you, I understand what it's like to live with an eating disorder and be held back by body image struggles. The recovery journey is ongoing, and we're all in it together as we learn to embrace new behaviors and new thoughts day by day. Join me as I connect with eating disorder experts and thought leaders to give you the tools, resources, and strategies you need to recover strong. Hello and welcome back, Warrior. Today, I'm going to give you a sneak peek into an exclusive expert Q&A session that recently occurred live inside the Courage Club. Each month, we do a deep dive into a topic with a leading expert, and this one was all about food cravings with registered dietitian and founder of Courage to Nourish, Alex Raymond. She provided so many insights as she answered member questions about things like the less obvious ways that restriction can show up, even when you're overeating or binging, and how to work with impulsivity in recovery, and she touches on the topic of how you can respect your body even when you don't like how it looks. In today's snippet, you'll hear Alex Raymond explain the art of identifying cravings and honoring your hunger cues, along with the complicated relationship that satisfaction and guilt can play with food, and how you can customize common recovery tools like the hunger and fullness scale to better serve your individual needs. Everything you'll learn today is from the first 30 minutes of the hour plus Q&A. But if you want to get full access to the entire session and the opportunity to directly ask questions and engage with our experts, plus active daily support for your recovery, visit www.jointhecourageclub.com to get on the Courage Club waitlist. Right now, the only way to get the long-term support that the Courage Club provides on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis is to join one of our live programs hosted inside the Courage Club. With over 8 years of developing out a community-centered care model, we have found live interaction and group learning to be the ideal setup to reach a strong and active recovery alongside other members of your treatment team. Our Body Image Accelerator program, Beyond Body, just closed doors for the spring. So now it is time to get ready for Food Freedom, our next live opportunity to plug into the Courage Club's community-centered care. Go to www.jointhecourageclub.com and we will notify you when we open doors to our next live program. Now let's get into this Q&A with registered dietitian Alex Raymond, featuring Jessica Flint, the founder of Recovery Warriors, as host. Let's dive in.
Today, I am grateful to be with Alex Raymond, a registered dietitian nutritionist and the founder of Courage to Nourish. Alex started Courage to Nourish with the dream of providing a safe, non-judgmental, and health at every size aligned client-centered care model. And it's just been so cool to witness her work online and see all the wisdom that she is sharing with her clients and the world at large once again on her social media account for Courage to Nourish. So welcome, Alex. So happy to have you here with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to talk about hunger and cravings and fullness today. So
yes, we have a lot we're getting into. And I love that, you know, since our community-centered care is the Courage Club and then you have Courage to Nourish, I felt like, wow, those are so aligned. When you came up with the name Courage to Nourish, was that something around, like, I'm just curious, what was the behind the formulation of the name for you?
Yeah. So we were just kind of bouncing around like different names and different, basically like different words that we liked. So Courage, Nourish, I think Empower was in there. Like there was all just different, I guess, values that like we felt like aligned with eating disorder recovery. And I think eventually Courage to Nourish just kind of came off of, you know, our tongues, and we like trialed it for a little while, and then we're kind of like, yeah, this is great. You know, we really like Courage to Nourish. It kind of flows off of the tongue. I think it represents a lot of what people do in recovery, like finding courage to eat food and to be less afraid of food and to navigate, you know, different sensations in their bodies. And, you know, that can be really hard in the world that we live in, especially with diet culture and anti-fatness and all of that stuff. So, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Very proud of the name.
Yeah. And well, and speaking of sensations in the body, we did want to talk today about, you know, the difference between hunger and cravings, or just cravings in general. A lot of people can feel like they have these cravings and they can feel confused by them and they're not sure if they should follow the craving or like the urge that can feel so powerful and intense. So just to start us off, like how do you see the difference between hunger and cravings?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of want to start out by saying that this, every person might feel these sensations differently. And I think that's also part of what makes hunger and cravings and fullness like difficult for a lot of people in recovery, is because it could feel different from person to person. And it also can feel a little bit different from day to day too, just depending on like stressors that are going on in our lives, or, you know, maybe what we ate the day before, or how much movement we engaged in that day, or, you know, what we have going on, if it's like a party or something, you know, a different social event or something. But the way that I like to describe, I guess, the difference between hunger and cravings is hunger is basically that physical sensation that we have of emptiness in our bellies, right? So it's our body's way of giving us a signal that we need more food to be able to fuel our day-to-day activities. So oftentimes, especially if someone is an intuitive eater, they might get that physical sensation of hunger like pretty regularly from day to day, right? Because our bodies actually get used to the different times of day that we need food. So they tend, you know, our brain tends to send that signal like pretty consistently. Again, if someone's an intuitive eater. And then kind of how I like to describe a craving is like what you're in the mood for at that specific time when you're hungry. And oftentimes cravings and hunger go together. Like I know for me personally, like if I am hungry, I can sense what I want to have that might sound good and that might satisfy, you know, my hunger at that moment. You know, so for example, for this week for lunch, I'm making like chicken parm sandwiches. It's actually this really cool recipe that I found online, and it's pretty easy and quick to make. But that is something that is like going to satisfy my hunger versus like if I were to have maybe like a pasta salad, that wouldn't be something that like I personally am in the mood for. So yeah, hunger is more so the physical sensation, and then a craving is like what we actually want and what we're desiring in that moment.
Okay. And so do you find with, you said when people are intuitive eaters, they're more in check with, or, you know, in tune with what their hunger signals are and the hunger that they feel in the stomach. Do you find with someone has a history of restrictive eating that those signals can get dampened or diminished and maybe they can't really tune in as readily to their hunger signals?
Yeah, absolutely. So when people have a history of restricting their intake, or even, you know, I mean, chronic dieting, binge eating disorder, you know, all of those tend to stem from some form of restricting, our hunger cue actually gets suppressed. And that's basically because the body can't really trust us to eat when it sends us the hunger signal, because like we've been ignoring it for so long that in order to get that signal back, it's really important that a person starts to eat regularly again and starts to give themselves permission to eat enough when they are hungry.
Mm. So it kind of reminds me of that fable, right? The boy who cried wolf. It's like, hungry, hungry. Yeah. And you're like, no.
Right.
Hungry. Yeah.
Ah, you know, like, no, thank you. I'm just going to ignore you right now.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of cool that our bodies do that, because it's in a way a safety mechanism, right? Like the body's like, well, I don't want to waste any energy. It's going to take me energy to send this hunger cue to you. But if you're just going to ignore it, then I'm not going to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And so with cravings, wow, like chicken parmesan sounds so amazing. Do you find that like people have different types of foods that they crave at different times, or like have you noticed any relationship with cravings and, you know, any physiological state changes? Maybe someone's tired or dehydrated.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good question. I think for the most part, just general cravings from person to person, they're just going to drastically be different, you know? So again, like a chicken parm sandwich might be something that satisfies me today for my lunches, but for someone else, they might want to have, you know, soup and salad or pasta salad or whatever. And then I don't know if you've ever heard this, but you know how some of your friends are like, oh yeah, I'm much more of a salty snack person. Like I would rather have chips or Cheetos or pretzels or whatever. And then there's other people who are just sweet people. I'm one of those people. Like I would pick a dessert over a bag of chips like any day. And I think that's just because that's who I am and what I prefer. So when it comes to like basic cravings, again, that's just dependent on person to person. What's interesting though, or at least what I've found with working from clients, and it definitely makes sense with the science that we have, is a lot of my clients have fears about craving specifically carbs or like those snacky food items, desserts, chips, and that kind of stuff. You know, they're like, hey, anytime that I start eating this stuff, it's really tough for me to stop, or I'm worried that I'm gonna like quote unquote overeat them because it seems like I crave them so much. Like, why do I do that? Like, why am I craving these foods so much? And part of that is honestly due to the restriction of those foods, right? Like the more that you're restricting a certain item, the more that you're gonna want it. And another reason too is like, If we think about this, if you have like a history of restriction and you're not eating enough, it makes a lot of sense that you're gonna crave carbs because that's also the quickest energy that our body gives us, right? So it's like you're not really gonna crave carrot sticks or spinach because that's not gonna give your body a ton of fuel versus having something like chips or cake, like that is, you know, and it's scary because of diet culture, right? Like there's nothing really inherently wrong with having chips or cake or craving those foods, but because society tells us that they're bad, you know, that can easily get in our heads and be like, oh my goodness, it's not okay that I'm craving these things.
Yeah, it creates that like barrier to even like allowing it, like allowance. I love how you say like, you know, you with craving you use the word like satisfy. Because I feel like so often, you know, like someone, or I remember back when I had a disorder, like I would crave something, but then I wouldn't allow myself to have it. So I'd take like the alternative, you know, or like the healthier, quote unquote, version of it. But it was like, but I'm unsatisfied. And then enter binge later just because that was never filled. Like I never allowed that satisfaction to be met.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people with eating disorders kind of fear that satisfaction because, again, oftentimes food that makes us feel really satisfied or foods that are off limits according to, you know, the eating disorder, according to diet culture.
And so how do you work with the guilt that can come up then? So if someone's like, I don't want to feel satisfied because satisfied means that I'm, you know, eating these foods that I've deemed off limits by diet culture. How do you work with what happens, you know, psychologically in the mind at these points in time?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's so hard. You know, I think it's so common. And I think everyone who's going through an eating disorder, well, not everyone, I guess, you know, but a lot of people, right, who are going through an eating disorder do experience that guilt after they're disobeying their eating disorder's food rules. Right. So I think it's tough because unfortunately, one of the only ways to work through it is to keep doing it. You know, and I think the more that people with eating disorders eat the foods that they feel afraid of, the guilt will fade over time because it'll get easier over time to be able to give themselves permission to have certain foods. One of the things I like to talk to my clients about too is this whole idea of like, well, what would you tell a friend, you know, or what would you tell your younger self? Or if you have a child or a younger brother or a younger cousin, like what would you tell that person? Because oftentimes my clients couldn't imagine like making another person feel guilty about like what they're eating, right? They're usually like, no, of course, if they want to have this food, they absolutely should. So trying to almost like put it on another person and step out of like their own self with the eating disorder can be really helpful to process some of the guilt.
Yeah. It creates that like cognitive dissonance where it's like, if I like tell them that they can do it, but I can't, like where are the values aligning or like where's that alignment? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how can someone tell if they're hungry for something other than food? Because sometimes it can feel like in the mind, just like, well, am I hungry? Am I not hungry? Like I just ate, right? If someone's doing like eating by the clock, then they're like, should I wait? Like it can start to be like very confusing in the mind. So what are ways that someone can tell if they're hungry for something other?
Sure. Yeah. Like if they're hungry for like connection or if they're poor. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's another really good question when it comes to hunger and cravings, you know? So I think I do want to say that like there isn't really, I guess, a perfect answer to this and there's not really a perfect solution because I think hunger and emotions are so tightly bound together, right? Like some people notice that when they're feeling really stressed, maybe their hunger cues get suppressed, right? On the other end, some people notice when they're really stressed, they tend to be hungrier. So there's all sorts of reasons why we eat. And if sometimes we eat because of an emotion, like that is okay. You know, we're human and I don't think we're ever gonna get rid of eating just because we have an emotion, right? You know, that being said, of course, it's important to have different types of tools in your toolkit to use, and eating can absolutely be one of them. And then, you know, we can, it's also can be really helpful to identify like what emotion I'm feeling. So like what is actually going to soothe that emotion? Because sometimes we eat like to numb an emotion versus like actually feel it and, you know, soothe kind of whatever's going on. So anyway, sometimes what I'll recommend clients do, like if they're really confused about their hunger and whether or not they're still hungry, I might recommend that they take like 10 minutes to like reflect on what's going on. So that might mean that they get out a piece of paper and then they journal like what they notice they're feeling in their body, you know, what they noticed about their day, what they're noticing about their anxiety level or their stress level. So this way they might be able to pick up on different cues that might lead them to an emotion, or it might lead them back to a hunger or craving, right? You know, and the reason why I say 10 minutes is because if you don't have like an answer after 10 minutes, I usually say like, okay, well, you can set the timer again and set it for another 10 minutes and check in and see how you're feeling. Or like, it's also okay to eat something and see how you're feeling like after you're eating, right? Because what gets tricky about that is a lot of people in recovery like have these external rules for how much food is appropriate. So like there might be this judgment if they actually need like a second serving of dinner or whatever, when it's, you know, it might actually be that, hey, they're still hungry. And that's kind of why they might be feeling a little bit anxious, right? Because they actually didn't give themselves enough fuel. And with the journaling, they also might be able to pick up on different signals that relate to hunger. So I know at first I described hunger as like this empty feeling in your stomach, right? But there also are other signals for hunger. So like sometimes, let's say you're really, you know, invested in your work or your homework and you're jotting down a lot of, you know, you're taking a lot of notes, you're typing a paper, like you might not really notice that it's lunchtime, you know, because you might not have that physical sensation of hunger, but you might start to notice that like your note taking gets slower or your brain is drifting towards food, or maybe you start to get like a headache or you start to feel tired. Like even though you don't have that physical sensation, those still are signals that you could be hungry. So I guess the overall goal is like taking some time to bring awareness as to like what your body is feeling. And then once you have that awareness, taking, you know, a next step.
What are ways that you see like anxiety manifest in someone's body when they're talking through, okay, what did you observe? What did you notice? Like, how can you tell or help someone kind of understand how this emotion could possibly, I know there's different ways it manifests in each body, but different ways that you've seen with people and how it manifests.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, well, they call it butterflies in your stomach for a reason, right? So that is definitely like a huge physical manifestation of anxiety, as we do actually feel it in our bellies, which gets really confusing because that actually changes like how we might experience hunger when we're feeling anxious. So that definitely is a main sign that I might look for, is like, okay, are you feeling any like fluttering, I guess, in your chest to stomach area? And typically that's where most people, I say, would experience anxiety. But of course, it's not wrong if you feel like you experience anxiety somewhere else in your body.
So kind of like a fluttering, maybe like a tightness that can happen.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, for sure. Like a feeling of like, I can't really sit still, or I feel like I'm kind of like, my skin's like crawling a little bit.
Yeah. Like just wanting to like break out of where you're at.
Yeah.
Like I feel like sometimes it can be like a trapped feeling, but yet it's like you don't feel like you can move. So it just kind of creates that that kind of fear, I guess, is just like that. I can't get out of this. So I'm stuck in this, which can feel really, right? We need some courage to nourish in that moment.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, what about, so I'm like curious with fatigue, how that can turn in. It can affect someone's cravings and hunger. I know that many people can go the whole day and possibly not be nourishing themselves regularly and adequately. So they could have actual, you know, fatigue just from low energy, from not having enough fuel, or just fatigue from being a human going through life and having a full day. So how have you seen that fatigue works, or how do you help people navigate cravings, trigger hunger, triggers and hunger when they're fatigued.
Yeah, when they're feeling fatigued. Yeah, yeah. I mean, kind of like you said, one of the things that if people are noticing that they're feeling tired, but they feel like they're getting enough sleep, like we'll often talk about their stress levels, you know, and I'll often make sure that they're eating enough, you know, because you are, like you said, you are going to feel more tired and more fatigued if you're not eating enough through, you know, day to day. I tend to find when people feel fatigued, they might crave things that give them energy. And again, that's going back to some of those like carb sources, right? So like pasta or chips or rice or whatever, which again makes sense because our body, like especially if it's the middle of the day and we're feeling fatigued and we didn't get enough sleep the night before, like your body's going to be looking for something that's going to give you energy for the rest of the day. You know, and again, I want to add that clarifier of that's like not a bad thing. So diet culture might think that's a bad thing and eating disorder might think that that's a bad thing. You know, but in reality, your body's just kind of looking to help you and looking to give you energy for the rest of the day. So I think I know for myself personally, like when I'm feeling more tired and I'm feeling fatigued, like I actually have a hard time deciding what I'm craving, you know, so I might notice that I'm hungry, but I actually might really not be craving anything in particular. So like at that moment, I just have to give myself permission to eat something. It's like, ugh, I don't really want a sandwich and chips, but like, that's what I have in my fridge. So I just got to eat it because I have to get through this meal. I have to get through this day.
Makes sense though, because right, if you're fatigued, your brain just is like, I'm done. I don't want to make more decisions. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Have a frozen meal, have like a snack plate, just get something that you know is going to be enough for whatever meal it is. Yeah. So yeah.
Now with the physiological state of like dehydration, have you found that influences someone's hunger or cravings if they're not getting enough water in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was definitely something that I was taught in school of like, you know, and I think we hear this all the time in diet culture of like, oh, you're not hungry, you're actually thirsty. I guess it's possible that some people, if they're not drinking enough water, they might mistake thirst to hunger. But like, I don't know. I also want to put trust in our bodies that we probably do know the difference between when we're thirsty and when we're hungry. You know, and I think that is kind of can be like a diety way to be like, we'll just drink water to like basically like, you know, avoid eating, you know. So in that type of situation, like if you're not really sure if you're hungry or not, or if you're not really sure if you're thirsty, like it can't hurt to have a snack, you know. And like if you have a snack and you drink some water and you realize like, oh, actually, I didn't really need that snack, I wasn't really hungry for it, like that's okay. You know, like your body's not really going to be mad at you for eating a bit more food than you might have needed in that moment. And then this way, like you can learn from that experience of like, oh, those signals that I was having, that was actually thirst, or like that actually was a signal that I needed to take a rest, or it was a signal that I needed to go for a walk around the block. I actually wasn't hungry, you know. And again, it's just something that we can kind of pocket in our brains, because it's never really going to be a wrong thing if you wind up like mistaking signals and you wind up eating instead. It can be used as a learning experience, but you know, again, I feel like most humans probably aren't going to mistake like thirst and hunger, because usually like thirst is more of that like mouth feel of like, I need some water, and like hunger, we tend to feel that in our stomachs. Like I don't feel thirst in my stomach personally, but maybe there are some people out there who do. But
yeah, I like your kind of experimental observational stance that you take with kind of just, you know, making note of things and allowing yourself to reference back to it like a good scientist would, right? Like, what is the outcome? What are the results? Can I, you know, keep these in mind for the future? It gives evidence.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one, something that I've taken with me with being Haze and intuitive eating aligned, is just this idea of like, you know, giving feedback to the person and doing experimentation and like kind of trying things on your own, you know, especially if you're in a place in recovery where you're ready for a little bit of that, because at the end of the day, like I can't tell my clients if they're hungry or not, right? Like I can't tell them if they're thirsty or not. They're really the only people who like can analyze that themselves and their body, you know, and like the eating disorder makes that feel really complicated and confusing. And it takes that autonomy away from people by adding external rules, you know? So again, if we can kind of talk about it ourselves and do some of that experimentation and talk about, you know, different signals that someone might be experiencing, then like we might be able to come to some conclusion about how their body, you know, exists in the world.
Mm, yeah. You know, I'm curious observationally if you've seen, because I know myself, once I saw this, it was like, whoa, how much the menstrual cycle or just, you know, different fluctuations in hormones can change someone's cravings or even their amount of hunger, like their hunger and actually the amount of food they need to feel satisfied. Have you seen that, or do you work with any of your clients around their menstrual cycle just to notice that? Because I think diet culture really teaches us to just have this like flat line, like this is your line and don't go over and don't, like, you know, just keep at that. And it's like, but if you look at our hormones, we're like, woo. Right. Like, and so I find when I allowed that in, I was like, oh, wait, like I'm not out of control, quote unquote. I'm just eating to my body's needs.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like we're humans and like every day is going to be totally different for us. Right. Like, I don't know. I mean, most people, we have our routines. Right. But we're going to go to bed at around a different time every night. We're going to get up at around a different time every morning and we're going to feel different, you know, each and every day. So, yeah, I always like remind my clients and that like humans aren't robots. Right. Like we need a different amount of food every day and that's okay. So, hey, there is a relationship between hormones and menstrual cycles and, you know, cravings and hunger. And I do think generally people who experience menstrual cycles tend to feel hungry before their cycle, like more hungry than usual, I guess, when their cycle comes on. And like, again, that's okay. You know, so like you said, you're not feeling out of control. You're not, you know, like overdoing it with food or whatever. It's like it's really important to acknowledge that, hey, like I'm hungrier, my cycle is likely coming on, and like this is what my body is asking to feed me right now, or asking to feed it right now.
Yeah, like the cravings can be more, and they, I mean, I have never bared child, but I hear too that like pregnant women can be like pickles and ice cream. I know that's like the cliche, yeah. But
together
in time. But like just the cravings can get like so intense, you know, or just like this, I want this, right? The specific thing.
Yes, absolutely. Right, which can be annoying if you don't have it, right? It's like, oh my gosh, I'm craving like, you know, chocolate covered almonds, but I don't have that in my cabinet. Then, you know, that can be really annoying and frustrating, you know, but part of recovery, and this is way easier said than done, right? But part of recovery is learning to trust like what your body is telling you, you know? And I think it can be really helpful to talk to your team about that too, of like, what ways are you already trusting your body? And then in what ways are you afraid to trust your body?
How do you recommend someone to, this was a question that we had from a member, how do you recommend someone to build or help rebuild body trust? So maybe they've had years of really shutting off any signals to their body. Yeah. How do you see that process of rehabilitation and repair work?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's a great question. And it does take time, you know? So like I said, it is way easier said than done. And I think everyone in recovery is going through that process of how they can, you know, reestablish trust within their body. One thing I will do with clients is we'll talk through like all of the ways that they already have that trust, you know? So if you think of different examples of how you might already trust your body, and it doesn't have to do with food, you know, it could have to do with like a gut instinct, you know, it could have to do with you like studying, you know how much you have to study before a test, or it could do with sleep, or like going to the bathroom actually is a great example. Like most of us, we know when we have to use the restroom and we're going to trust that. Like we're not going to question, wait, do I have to pee right now? Or is that just my body like faking it? You know, like we can recognize that signal pretty easily. So yeah, just kind of going through a list of like all the ways you already trust your body. And I think there will be more ways than you initially think, because that kind of helps to kind of highlight the physical sensations that like you're already experiencing and that you already know what they mean.
Yeah, like your body tells you when you're cold, like, okay, let me go get a sweater. Body tells you when you're hot, sweaty armpits. Let me take that off.
Yeah. Put on more deodorant. Put on more deodorant. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. No, those are good examples too. You know, from there, we might do some experiments when it comes to food, you know? So it might be like, okay, only between, you know, lunch and dinner, like I want you to check in every half hour, every hour, whatever, you know, whatever you decide with your dietitian or with your therapist, like I want you to check in regularly and kind of think about the different sensations that you're having and think about like what that's telling you, you know, like maybe you're feeling tired, maybe you have a little bit of a headache, maybe, I don't know, maybe you're feeling anxious. And it's okay if you don't know why. It's okay if you don't know exactly what those sensations are telling you, but just like kind of practicing this idea of like listening to the feedback. I guess not listening to the feedback that your body's telling you, but like feeling it and understanding it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's almost like you're learning a language. So you're just like listening to this new language and like understanding how it communicates with you.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, all information that a person is gathering that they can kind of take back to their treatment team and like piece apart a little bit to try to, yeah, like understand it better and understand like what their body is trying to communicate, you know. And you might find that like, hey, that was actually really difficult. And like, we need to take a step back and like do something different until I can get to a place where I can listen more to my body.
Heard, you know, over the years that sometimes the hunger fullness scale can really throw people off because like the perfectionist can come in and it's like, am I a 2, 3? Like, where it, like you can overthink it, you know? And how have you worked? Is there ways that you've kind of helped people who maybe come in and feel a little, you know, that perfectionist can kick in around like, I want to get the scale really accurate and calibrated, so every time I use it, I know I'm, you know, giving the right amount, which can create more pressure. And
Yeah, I think I'll do two things. So the first thing is I might basically like scrap the initial scale and just like ask a client to design their own hunger scale that we can do in session. So like that might not be a 0 through 10. It might be a 1 through 5 or, you know, whatever the client like deems appropriate. And we might talk about different like sensations that that person experiences like on their own scale, right? So this way, like they're the ones creating it instead of this like third party. Then the second thing that I'll do is like basically group the different parts of the scale in ranges. So like 1 to 2 might go together, 3 to 5 might go together, 6 to 7 might go together, and then like 8 to 9, I don't know. Like, so then this way a client can kind of say, all right, like I'm within this range. And then this is the feedback that my body is giving me when I'm, you know, somewhere around a 3 to a 4.
I like that idea of like customizing it for yourself, because you can almost kind of put terms like that you may find, or like the way you describe your bodily sensations or the emotions that can come in, or you can probably find ways to make that feel more connected to your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because I think the scale is obviously a tool, and I don't think any tool in recovery is a perfect tool, right? So it can be helpful for people to adapt tools that work for themselves, you know, and the last thing that we want the hunger and fullness scale to become is another food rule, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
do you find when somebody, let's say they let the scale go really low and they're really hungry and then they eat, do you find that sometimes they'll feel more like tired after that? Because I've heard people where they say like, but when I eat, I get tired and it's supposed to give me energy. I'm curious if you've seen like why that can be for some people when they eat and they get more tired from that.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a good answer to this, honestly. You know, I could definitely see it being because a person is like letting themselves get too hungry, you know, and I could also kind of seeing it like when you're kind of acknowledging, if you have an eating disorder and then you're acknowledging that you're hungry and you eat something, like it's possible that your body's also giving you like other signals. And one of them might be to rest. You know, if we think about it, like the culture that we live in is very like go, 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 right? Like you get up, you start whatever it is that you're doing. Like you don't stop until the end of the day after dinner. So, you know, it could be possible that it's just like a time of day where your body's like, we need to take a little bit of a break. Could be a coincidence that it coincides with mealtime, honestly. You know, again, I know for me, like I definitely get tired during that like nap time, like 2 to 4, you know, so that's when I might arrange my schedule to do something a little bit like easier and lighter so I don't have to expend a lot of brain energy.
Yeah. I've enjoyed kind of seeing more research come to light around how important sleep is, like midday naps and things. And there's some places that even like have nap lounges at work and things like to really like, let's normalize napping.
I am about that. I've been a napper since like high school. Like I would come back from school and take a nap. Like I still take naps from, you know, time to time, sometimes every day. Like,
yeah.
So
nap life is, it's a lot to it.
Yeah.
Now,
absolutely.
So we have a few more questions from members here. So I did kind of ask this, maybe if you have other things to say, but how did you help, or how do you help your clients work through guilt after eating certain foods and amounts? Like, is there, I guess you, if there's anything else you want to say to that, just around the guilt that can come up if they feel like, oh my God, I crossed that boundary, I broke that rule. We are doing inside of the Courage Club, we have monthly warrior challenges that push people to break their food rules or to eat different types of varieties of foods. And so I know a lot of people can feel like, oh my gosh, I crossed that line, I passed the red zone, and like I the guilt can come in.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, I definitely want to normalize that. I think that happens for everyone as they're breaking their food rules and like going against what the eating disorder says is acceptable. You know, one way, and you know, some of you might have heard this before, but like I always like, you know, to remind people that an eating disorder is like a little bit of a safety bubble, you know, like it feels, even though the ED takes a lot away from us, like it also feels very cozy to kind of be in that safety net, you know, like you can follow strict rules and you know exactly what to do. And like going outside of that little safety bubble is like really overwhelming. So, you know, I think the more that you challenge the food, your food rules or specific feels like you'll specific foods, you'll feel less guilty doing, like you'll feel less guilty over time. You know, and I wish that there was like a better answer than that or a better way to do it. But I think the eating disorder, like, you know, needs to know that it's okay to have these foods and like you don't have to be afraid, and you're going to prove to the eating disorder that you are going to eat these foods even though you're going to feel guilty, and that gives it less power.
Yeah. I feel like the recovered self starts to like get the throne in that case. Yeah. It's, I don't know why this is like coming to my mind, but when I was creating the Rise Up and Recover app, I moved to Mexico just because it was more economic and I was able to, you know, be able to create that. Also, I was, you know, in a relationship, but the, like the driving patterns in Mexico versus the United States are like night and day. Like the United States is like, you know, the red, the stop sign and like full stop and like just, it's very, you know, like you're going to get a ticket and a penalty. Like we're pretty strict on our rules and we have tons of intersections and lights. And like in Mexico, it was like the Wild West, like, but it was like people were like, but it was organized chaos. Like everybody, like it all worked. And I actually like driving there, I became such a better driver, because in the US, even though we have all of these like crazy rules, people still like are on their phone. And like I see more crazy drivers in the US like just doing things where it's like, but in Mexico, I just want to say it's like there was this like, there was no, it felt like there was no rules type of, like for me at first, like the rule US like rule follower, I'm like, wait, like you're not following the rules. But it's like it all worked. And it was, it really like, I actually appreciated driving in Mexico more than the US. And like, I feel like it's made me a like a better driver. And so I kind of feel like with all the rules, we can get so like, oh, and then it's like, just allow yourself to eat like intuitively. And you may feel like it's chaos, but it's like not. It's actually more fun when you give yourself the, you know, the time to connect with that.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's kind of an like an interesting metaphor, I guess. And it's like the more time you spent in Mexico, like the more you got used to the driving there and it wound up being okay. And like, you know, like you were able to get used to like the optional rules that were there, the different driving culture, I guess, you know. So I guess that is kind of like intuitive eating, where it's like, yeah, the more you engage in it and the more you engage in recovery, like you'll learn the new strategy, I guess.
Yeah, it becomes your new normal. At first you're like, what is going on? Yeah. Like you guys are crazy. Like why? Like, this is way too much. Like, and then after a while you're like, yeah, like, keep going. Yeah. So
yes, yeah.
Where can all the warriors, or how can all the warriors stay in touch with you?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's our website. It's just couragetonourish.com. We do have a couple of free resources on there as well, other than the body image workbook. So, and we have a monthly newsletter and a blog with a bunch of different topics. So, you know, if there's any information about eating disorders that you're hoping to find, we do have stuff on our website. So yeah, that's couragetonourish.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for being here and sharing your insights and wisdom. And yeah, we learned a lot today with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Well, my warrior friend, thank you for having the discipline to listen in. If you found this episode helpful and know somebody in recovery who could benefit from its inspiring message, please share this show with them. It would mean the world to us at Recovery Warriors if we can get our cause out to more people struggling with an eating disorder. So if what you heard today was helpful, share the show with another warrior or anyone on your treatment team. You can do this directly from your podcast player or send them over to recoverywarriors.com. We have a goldmine of free resources there for all stages of recovery. And until the next episode, may compassion light the path you are on and courage keep you on it. You totally got this, warrior.